You know, sometimes in life, things happen suddenly, change our life suddenly with difficulty. There's the accident, the loss of a loved one, loss of a job, end of a relationship. And when that happens, we find ourselves falling on the resources we have to meet the situation, our practices, our personal resources, our communities. But there are other times that things happen that bring difficulty. We can see them coming, sometimes from kind of a ways away, and we have the luxury of being able to think and plan in advance, how do we want to meet this? How do we want to respond? And from where inside us do we want to respond? And this coming week, coming up with this election, nothing new has happened in the country. The forces that we will see this week have been here for a while. It's not a surprise to anybody. But this week is kind of an okay corral moment when the opposing forces show up and make a showing. So it's a moment that there's a clear picture of what's happening. And we're watching kind of the slow collision of democracy with non-democracy forces in our country. And it's time for us to show up with our practice. And, you know, every generation has to work for the principles that we hold dear. And this is our moment. It's not a mistake. It's not a crisis. This is what we took birth for. This is the moment that we show up for. So, I want to talk about how we bring our practice into this, the coming period of time, and how we respond from deeper principles, knowing that we're going to all experience strong emotions. And a lot of emotions are going to come and go. I don't know what's been happening for you, but there's been a lot of visitors in this body mind, you know, some a bit of dread, some worry, some disappointment, some anger. A lot of things have been regularly showing up at the door. This is not a problem. The Dharma tells us it's not about feeling other than we feel or feeling these better feelings. It's about finding what we are feeling and meeting it. And meeting it with compassion, with kindness, with curiosity and gratitude. Because what the Dharma teaches us is when we feel difficult emotions, it's information. It's the sign that something needs attending a response to in us. So when we feel those emotions, instead of going, oh, I hate feeling this way, we can go, welcome, I've got you. What do you have for me? What can you show me? So don't try to feel better. People often come to spiritual practice because they want to feel different feelings than what they're feeling. This is not about feeling better. This is about looking at what you are feeling and taking heed. In this moment in our country, the ideals that our country were founded on are very, very possibly at risk. And the reason why we're feeling worry and fear and upsetness is the strength of the love we have for these ideals. And they come from our practice, too, of equality, of equal opportunity, that everybody gets a place at the table. So the reason why those feelings are come from a positive place of what our practice inclines us to, what our hearts incline us to. So don't look at difficult feelings as the enemy. They're your fuel. So I'm way off my talk. Okay. On the other hand, when we feel those feelings, we don't want to respond from them. We don't want to respond from emotional thinking. We don't want to move the way fear wants us to move. We don't want to act out the way anger wants us to act out. That's the challenge of holding these feelings, respecting them, but they're not pulling the levers. It's so easy to blame and to other and to try to fix. So we need to have a place where we can hold these feelings but not act from them. That's our work, is it not, in practice? And This is about being present with ourselves and present with others in our community around us. So what I wanted to do is offer three basic guidelines, because we do have this little bit of planning time. It's just a guide. I hope it'll be useful for us moving through the coming period of time, however long that will be. And the first one is about difficult emotions. And I'm just going to give an overview here, because that's a deep teaching, and I think in a lot of ways the core teaching of this path is dealing with difficulty when it comes up. But what I want to say, the practice here is meeting your feelings with presence. To simply feel what you're feeling and make room for everything. Rumi had a poem, one of his favorite poems is The Guest House. Every moment, a new arrival in this human experience, a joy, a depression, a meanness, a sadness. And he said, meet them at the door laughing, even if they smash all your furniture, because each one is sent as a guide from the beyond. And that's what this means. When these emotions come up for us, they're evoking something deeper in us. They're evoking a deeper value. So we honor them, and in a way, we're grateful for them, because they're a guide from the beyond. It's so easy to judge ourselves. Oh, I shouldn't feel this way. I shouldn't feel that way. But the Dharma teaches us something different. It teaches us not to distance ourselves from anything we're feeling. In the sutras, it talks about not you shouldn't feel this way or you shouldn't feel that way. It talks about recognizing what you are feeling, knowing what's present in the body, knowing what's present in the mind. That's our mindfulness practice, not to be in a certain state, but to know the state that we're in, to be fully present and accepting of it. So dealing with this stuff, it's not about getting rid of it or sublimating it or acting it out or anything like that. It's about holding it, because the basic teaching is who you are. You are the open, aware presence of the cosmos in the aperture of a human being. Who you are is bigger than any conditioned object you could experience. Any feeling, any depression, any illness, anything you could experience, you are bigger than and can hold. And that's what we do by developing the observer, right? Is we're finding that bigger space that we can be in. And on the other hand, what comes up all the time is resistance. And our Dharma word for this, we call it aversion, the, oh God, not this feeling. And resistance has so many forms, and we each have our top three. You know, we can deny, we can distance ourselves from, we can go open the refrigerator door, we can start scrolling through our computers or phones, we can pull out a bottle of wine, we can turn on the TV, we can act out, we can withdraw. I mean, all those things are ways of not feeling our feelings. And the Dharma teaching here is that flow of aversion, that flow of resistance, that's what we don't follow. We don't try to fix it. It's fine that it's there, but we don't follow its flow. And usually what happens, because I've noticed for me, what happens when resistance comes up is my mind gets really busy. I'm like, well, it shouldn't be this way, and this should happen, yada, yada. That's what we don't follow. We come back to what we're feeling. In the sutras, the word used for this practice is called abandonment. It's a very gentle word. It's kind of like if you're walking through the woods and a dog starts following you. You don't feed it and you don't pet it. If you know it's lost and you don't want it to come, you just abandon it. You leave it. And eventually it wanders off. You don't feed it with your attention. You don't indulge it. So we see those outflows as they're happening, and we abandon them. And sometimes it's 50 times an hour that thought comes up. You read something in the paper and you start, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. Step back, come back in the body, be with your emotion. We do this not to not feel, but when we follow the outflow, our chances of responding skillfully to create what we'd like to create in the world go down to a very minuscule level. When we respond from aversion, we create more aversion. If we want something different in the world to happen, we have to be what we want to see in the world. So it comes up, of course. And our practice is to recognize it. Again, this is a mindfulness practice, and to not follow it. So what's ironically is that when we resist it, when we, we're actually feeding it. We're actually feeding it energy. And that makes us less able to respond to whatever it's calling us to respond to. Does that make sense? It sounds a little counterintuitive, but your energy can only go one place, and it's either going to go to resisting, or it's going to go to, oh, here it is. How can I live? How can I live? How can I respond with wisdom to this? So we see this mental and energetic flow of aversion. We choose not to follow it. Don't have to deep six it. Don't have to beat it to death. We just say, no thanks, leave it on the store shelf. I'm not buying it. And we come back. And we stand on the ground of presence, present with. And when we can do this in our own presence, it's actually a huge response to the world. This is engaged practice. We can hear other people's pain with presence too. If you can't hear your own pain with presence, good luck with anybody else. So as we do this for ourselves, this isn't navel gazing. This is an incredibly active response to the world, to make everyone feel like, even no matter what they're feeling, we know that they are bigger than anything that they can feel, and we can support that in each other. So that's the first thing. With your emotional feelings, meet them with presence. The second thing I wanted to mention, because we do have this planning time, is nourishing yourself and other people around you. Take a little planning time, because this takes a lot of energy to go through a fraught process. It takes a lot to do this. And take a little planning. What can you do to take care of yourself? What can you do to take care of people around you? And I'd actually like to hear some response here. What comes to your mind when you think about, okay, this could be a tough week coming up. I might be up late a few nights watching returns coming in or whatever, or just feeling my feelings. What can I do for myself and those around me? What comes up for you?
Exercise.
Great one. Yep. Keep moving.
Cook.
Cook. Eat well. Don't eat the leftover Halloween candy this week. You know. Yeah, right. Getting to bed on time.
Napping.
Yeah, taking care of yourself. Here's another one. What about calling? What about reaching out and just checking in with people? What about asking for help when you need it? John.
I don't know if this is a good example or not, but I've been paying a lot less attention to it. I cast my vote about 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and I read headlines, and mm-hmm. I mostly don't read stories.
So what you're doing is you're putting a boundary.
I know that I can't change what is.
Yeah.
Why torture myself by going through it over and over?
I think what I would call that good boundaries of knowing you want to be informed, but you it can be a little draining and obsessive to go beyond what's good for you. So that's good. Yeah, the right boundaries. What else? Yeah.
Being in nature,
especially. Yeah. Thank you. So it takes it might be worth it. I know when I had calls with certain relatives years ago that were hard, I would plan what I was going to do right after I made the phone call. Because otherwise I'd be inside in front of the freezer eating ice cream directly out of the container with a spoon. So I would plan. Okay, right after I talk to someone, I'm going to call. I have a phone date set up with a friend. Or I'm going to go out for a walk. Or I'm going to whatever. So sometimes a little planning. Make a little plan for yourself. What can you do this week to just address stress? What can you do? So the third thing, and this is right out of the Dharma, it's about panna, wisdom. What is the right view and the right intention? We have choices to make of how we want to meet this. And this comes right out of panna. And, there are really, at the very bottom, there's only one choice. We can stand in the situation as the open oneness of awareness that we all are aspects of, or we can stand as the seemingly separated, ego-identified self, which has all of its own needs and securities. That's the bottom line choice. And all of the teaching ultimately is about that choice. And however we choose, our life will flow accordingly. We all know that, right? So, when we make that choice, then our sila, our right action, right lifestyle, right speech, flows from it. Another way to say this is to know your bottom line. And I just want to share a story. Last summer in our family, we had kind of a family crisis come up from a new member of our family who has got some difficult behaviors, and we had some stuff come up. And, you know, family situations are complicated. It's not often easy. Do I say something? Do I not say something? What about his interests? But then there's her interests, and they're different. And, you know, and it was kind of confusing, and we had a lot of family interaction about how do we meet this. And my son offered me something that really I thought was valuable. He said, you know, I had to think about this today. He said, actually, I did a bunch of writing, because this is not at the top of your head. You have to do some inquiry. What's my bottom line? What's my core principle here? And he said once, and he said, I thought I had it, and then I kept writing, and I slept on it and felt it. Once I knew what it was, he said, when I knew my core principle, he said, then I could look at any thought or action and go, does it align or does it not align? And it cut through a lot of confusional and emotional thinking. So I'm thinking after we might do a little bit of this together this morning, what's the core value here? Is it winning? Is it being right? Is it healing? Is it truth? What is it? And when we know that, both for ourselves and as a community, then we know what the action should be. It needs to go in that order. We don't act first and then figure it out later. If we spend some time figuring that out, the actions become clearer. Like, how do we respond? And it will look different for each of us, like facets of a jewel. Each of us may respond a little differently. Some of us may show up to volunteer time. Other people might do other things. Who knows? That's the beauty of why we're all wired a little differently and what makes life interesting. But we need to know that bottom line. And I'll just tell you, after I've been thinking about my bottom line, just to give you an example. My bottom line in our national situation is unity. It's the fact that we are all one. We are all one. And when I have that in my back of my head, it's so much easier when I confront something or something happens that's disturbing to say, is my reaction in line with that value, or is it not in line with that value? Does that make sense to you? It makes it easier to just figure out, because what do? How do we respond? How do we live? So anyways, with a yardstick like that, it just clarifies thought, it clarifies response. So I think that's worth spending some time on. So three guidelines here. One is to hold your difficult emotions with presence. Be grateful that they're there for a reason. They're not there to torment you. They're there just like pain in the body tells you that you need to take your hand off the stove. It's a similar thing that emotions do. It's a place calling for us to see clearly. So we're meeting that with presence in ourselves and in others. The second thing is, how do we take care of ourselves? How do we take care of those around us? That's kind of a sila thing. And the third thing is, we need to know our core principle, our core value, what that is for us.